It's early August, 1975, Middletown, Delaware. Inside a small, stuffy office on the outskirts of town, two men are deep in conversation. One of them, a short white man dressed in a crisply ironed suit, sits behind a wooden desk. He's a lawyer and carries an air of authority, as though he owns everything and everyone in the room. The lawyer leans back in his chair and takes a long, deep drag of his cigarette, watching the smoke curl around his stifling office. Meters away from him, the second man is a complete contrast. He's a tall, young-looking black man, dressed scruffily in tired jeans and a faded t-shirt. He paces around the room, muttering nervously and shaking his head in worry. This man is 38-year-old Wayman Camel Jr., and his life is currently in the lawyer's hands. You see, Camel is facing charges for two awful crimes, the robbery and rape of a 64-year-old woman. If found guilty, these felonies would result in a 45-year prison sentence, meaning Camel would spend the rest of his life behind bars. After 3 months of preparation, his trial is due to begin in a matter of weeks. But there's just one problem. Camel doesn't know which way to plead. He's not sure if he's innocent or guilty. On the night in question, Camel had been drinking heavily, almost to the point of blackout. As such, his memory of the events is completely blank. As he paces around the small office, his head bowed and hands shaking with nerves, he prays that he is innocent, that this is all a big misunderstanding, and he'll get to go home soon. But in the back of his mind is the nagging concern that he might be guilty. He just doesn't know. Suddenly, Camel's thoughts are interrupted by the sound of his lawyer clearing his throat. Gesturing to the empty chair in front of him, the lawyer tells Camel to sit and explains that he's had an idea. In a case as weak as theirs, with no evidence to his innocence and no memory of the night, there's not much hope of winning at trial. It will likely turn into a humiliating attack on Camel. But the lawyer assures him there's one thing they can do to avoid this. Camel leans forward in anticipation, hardly daring to breathe. Is there a chance he can escape from this nightmare? The lawyer moves closer to Camel, and Camel can feel his warm breath against him. With a firmness in his voice, the lawyer advises Camel to take a plea bargain, an agreement where you plead guilty to a lesser crime in order to receive a more lenient sentence. In this case, Camel would plead guilty to sexual abuse and robbery, rather than rape. Sexual abuse is a marginally less serious crime and would come with a 15-year sentence. Upon hearing this, Camel hangs his head in disappointment. It doesn't sound like a good deal to him. If he takes it and pleads guilty, he'll be confessing to a crime he doesn't remember committing. He'll be viewed as a sexual offender for the rest of his life. What would his family think of him then? His brothers, sisters, nieces, and nephews, worst of all, his mother. Then again, the bargain might be the lesser of two evils. He'll be able to avoid humiliation at trial, as well as dodging a sentence that would keep him locked up until he's an old man. His mind whirring in confusion, Camel racks his brain for the 100th time. He wills himself to remember that night, to find out what punishment, if any, he truly deserves. But as always, his memory is blank. Now, as he sits feet away from his lawyer, watching the cigarette smoke rise and fall, Camel faces an impossible choice. However, not everyone's memory about that fateful night is hazy. In fact, for one woman, it's crystal clear. In just over a decade from now, the woman will use her dying breaths to reveal what really happened and the part Camel played. At the moment of death, people often have an overwhelming need to get their biggest secret off their chest. From murder, fake identities, illicit affairs, and even government cover-ups, this show dives deep into the world's most explosive deathbed confessions. This is the story of Wayman Camel Jr., a man whose life changed on a night he can't remember. It's about his everyday struggles as an outcast of society, his unlikely friendship with an older woman, and a fateful evening which forever haunts his mind. It's about a flawed investigation and questionable prosecution. A justice system determined to find Camel guilty, and a deathbed confession given 11 years later, which finally tells the true story. I'm Estefania Hagman, and this is Deathbed Confessions.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all, but it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details. This episode is brought to you by Amazon Prime. You know Amazon Prime is not just a shipping subscription, right? It's got everything, including streaming TV and movies on Prime Video. And of course, Prime's fast, free shipping. Go from watching your favorite shows to getting your favorite things. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever you're into.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
In 1974, Middletown is a vibrant, thriving town in the state of Delaware. Located a few miles west of the beautiful Delaware Bay, it's home to a growing population and close-knit community. Along its busy sidewalks, music blares from open-topped cars, families flock to the town's movie theaters, and visit shops on Main Street. Neighbors are friendly to each other and their doors are always left open. There's a sense of belonging in Middletown, as though everyone's in it together. However, this is not quite true for all of its residents, especially not Wayman Camel Jr. From the outside, it might look as though Camel has a relatively normal life. He's employed as a construction worker, is surrounded by a large, loving family, and lives close to his mother, who he visits frequently. But in reality, his life is falling apart. Aged 37 years old, Camel is a chronic alcoholic. He relies on alcohol to get him through each day, spending his hours either hungover or drunk. This often gets in the way of his career, and he frequently shows up late, tired, and unfit to work. The addiction also takes its toll on Camel's finances, and more often than not, he finds himself without a dollar to his name. It's easy to imagine how every check from work is spent on alcohol, leaving next to nothing for food, rent, or basic necessities. But worse than all this, his alcoholism continually gets him in trouble with the law. In fact, by now he's racked up over 40 different criminal convictions. All have been alcohol-related. And that seems to be the sorry story of Wayman Camel Jr., a young man plagued by alcoholism and all its demons, set on a path of self-destruction. However, Camel's story doesn't end here. He's just a few months away from meeting a woman who will change his life. It's a cold winter's evening in Middletown, 1974. Temperatures have plummeted to near freezing, and a bitter, frosty wind howls through the streets, emptying the sidewalks of their usual throng of people. In a small bar, a few blocks away from Main Street, a roaring fire burns in the grate, and a band plays merrily. The bar is full of lively conversations as men and women huddle together, taking shelter from the cold. Sitting alone at a table by the door is Wayman Camel Jr. As usual, he's spending his evening drinking. The empty glasses that litter his table are proof that he's been here a while. Camel takes a long sip of his drink, feeling his mind drain of all its worries. He forgets that he doesn't have the money to pay for this one, or the one he'll inevitably order next. he doesn't even think about how much he's already drunk. Just then, as he begins to feel a blissful oblivion take over, the door to the bar flies open, letting in a gust of freezing wind. Standing in the doorway is a woman. She's short, her small frame swamped by the large winter coat she wears. Her hair is dark brown, peppered with strands of gray, and her pale cheeks are flushed from the cold. As Camel watches her, he guesses she's a number of years older than him, perhaps in her late 50s or early 60s. The woman looks around the bar searching for a free seat. Eventually realizing everywhere is full, her eyes land on Camel. There's an empty chair at his table. Camel smiles politely as she sits down and introduces himself. The woman takes his hand and says her name is Alice Mock. Camel cannot yet know the impact this chance encounter will have on his future. As the minutes stretch into hours, Camel and Mock chat animatedly to one another. To his surprise, Camel learns that Mock isn't too different from himself. Like him, she's had her own share of run-ins with the law over the years, although her charges have been related to sex work as opposed to drunkenness. She's also struggled to hold down a steady job and often sees her paychecks disappear the minute they arrive. And most similar of all, Mock shares Camel's dependency on alcohol. Bonded by these less than fortunate traits, the two misfits hit it off at once. As it turns out, the drink they share tonight will be the first of many. As the winter of 1974 grows colder, Camel and Mock's friendship blossoms. Despite their 27-year age gap, they enjoy each other's company and spend many afternoons and evenings drinking together in the bars of Middletown. Although their friendship grows, there are no signs of romance. The two remain strictly friends, fondly referring to one another as their drinking buddy. But the good times can't last forever, and soon their relationship will take a dark turn. The date is now May 17th, 1975. It's a warm evening in Middletown, and as usual, Wayman Camel and Alice Mock are enjoying a drink together, or rather a few drinks. What's unusual, though, is that Camel's wallet is stuffed with an assortment of dollar bills. Having just collected his weekly paycheck, he has around $300 in cash. Content that he has enough money to last the night, Camel and Mock sit at a small table on the sunlit sidewalk for hours, sharing jokes and telling stories. Even when the sun starts to dip below the town's buildings and the air grows colder, the pair show no signs of leaving. That is, until Camel reaches forward to grab his next drink and feels his head start to spin. His hand lands on the table with a heavy thud, missing the bottle he was reaching for. With a smash, their empty glasses crash to the ground and scatter along the sidewalk. Camel jumps up in shock and curses loudly. As he bends down to pick up the fragments of shattered glass, Mock pulls him up by the shoulders. She gently explains that he's too drunk to see what he's doing and is going to cut himself badly. She offers to take him back to hers. Mock only lives a few blocks away, so Camel agrees, and the two stumble home together through the streets. Minutes later, they arrive at Mock's building, but when they get there, she starts acting differently. All of a sudden, she seems nervous. She casts constant looks over her shoulder, as though worried someone will see her. It's with a sense of urgency that she opens her door and ushers Camel in. Strange considering that this is her neighborhood. But if Camel notices the abrupt change in her behavior, he doesn't say anything. He's got far more serious concerns. By the time he enters Mock's small apartment, his head is spinning uncontrollably. He's had too much to drink and is finding it difficult to stand. His vision is swimming, his balance unsteady. It's like he's on a roller coaster that won't stop. From somewhere in the distance, he hears Mock's voice telling him to go to bed. He can just about make out the shape of her bed on the other side of the room, near an open window. With enormous effort, Camel slowly staggers across the apartment until he reaches the empty bed. Without even taking off his shoes, he collapses onto the soft mattress below. Then, everything goes black. It's minutes before dawn on May 18th, and pale specks of sunlight are seeping through the window as a light breeze picks up gently rousing Wayman Camel. As Camel stretches sleepily, blinking in the light, he tries to work out where he is. Everything around him looks unfamiliar. He doesn't recognize this bed, those pictures on the wall, or any of the furniture. Even more confusing, he can hear voices in the distance, but he doesn't recognize any of them either. Camel tries to sit up straight and orient himself, but this slight movement proves too much. His head thumps and his vision blurs. Feeling his stomach lurch unpleasantly, he collapses back onto the bed. After what feels like hours, but can only be a matter of seconds, the voices in the distance suddenly rise in volume. It's like 100 men are shouting right into Camel's ears all at once. With a jolt, he forces himself to sit up, prying his eyes wide open. But the second he does so, he wishes he was back asleep. He's woken up into a nightmare. Camel quickly realizes that the shouting voices belong to police officers. There must be at least half a dozen of them all standing over him, crowding around the small bed. Camel can't work out what they're saying, but they seem to be angry. Angry at him. As he stares around in wild confusion, he notices Alice Mock. Sandwiched between two officers, she looks flustered and upset. Strangely, her right hand is pointing at Camel, like she's accusing him of something. At the sight of her, Camel realizes where he is and how he got there. He remembers how he and Mock enjoyed a few drinks together last night before he fell asleep in her bed. But that's where his memory stops. What could have possibly happened since then that's led to this awful scene? Before Camel can try to answer this question, two policemen are at his side. One is holding a pair of handcuffs which he forces onto Camel's wrists. The other pulls Camel to his feet and orders him to follow them. Camel doesn't know what's happening and looks desperately to his friend Mock, who's standing meters away. He wills her to meet his gaze or provide some sort of explanation, but she remains silent. With no choice but to obey the officers, Camel stands up and follows them out of the apartment. His head pounding as though his skull's about to crack, he limps into the pale sunlight of dawn and climbs into the back of a squad car, wondering what sort of fate awaits. As Camel is rushed to the Middletown police station and taken into custody, he discovers what he's been arrested for, the alleged robbery and rape of Alice Mock. He's told that Mock went to police late last night with a story that Camel took advantage of her. This is a serious offense to be charged with. If found guilty, Camel can expect a 45-year prison sentence, meaning he won't see freedom again until he's 83 years old. Inside a cramped cell at the Middletown station, the hours slowly stretch into days. Camel meets with various court-appointed lawyers and learns the basic details of his case. First, Camel hears that there's no evidence pointing either way. There are no witnesses, alibis, or physical proof that a sexual offense did or didn't take place. It's simply Mock's word against his. Second, despite this lack of evidence, lawyers tell Camel that his innocence will be almost impossible to prove in court. Seeing as he was drunk on the night in question, he'll be seen as an unreliable defendant. And of course, Camel knows that his case isn't helped by his own criminal history. With over 40 convictions to his name already, all of which are alcohol-related, it will be easy for the prosecution to paint him as a troublesome, lawless individual. The odds are not in his favor.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all, but it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
While Camel meets with lawyers and learns about his case, police set about investigating Mock's claims. With a felony as serious as rape, they need to ensure Mock's story is robust enough to stand up in court. Strangely, though, their investigation is littered with mistakes. When Mock takes a polygraph test, the results are lost immediately after. Camel himself is also ordered to take a lie detector test. But once again, there's no evidence of the outcome, or even that the test took place. It doesn't take Camel long to realize he's fighting a losing battle. With everything set against him, he barely stands a chance of being found innocent. So, with nowhere else to turn, and his court date creeping closer by the day, he eventually gives in to the pressure of his lawyer. In early August 1975, Camel enters into a plea bargain and pleads guilty to the sexual abuse and robbery of Alice Mock. Later that month, 38-year-old Camel is convicted of these two felonies and sentenced to 15 years behind bars. As he's locked in his cell at the Sussex Correctional Facility in Delaware, he knows he's facing the hardest years of his life. Sadly for Wayman Camel, his fears are well-founded, and the first few years behind bars are nothing short of unbearable. As a chronic alcoholic, Camel suffers excruciating withdrawal symptoms. He even experiences delirium tremens, an extreme type of withdrawal which can, in severe cases, lead to death. Camel endures tremors in his hands and feet, sharp chest pains, fevers that drag on for days, and terrifying hallucinations. His body is racked with agony. Not only does he suffer immense physical pain, but it's also easy to imagine the mental trauma Camel goes through. His mind must be tortured by what's happened. He's serving time for awful crimes he can't remember committing and doesn't believe himself capable of. Worse still, they're felonies against one of his own friends. As his days behind bars blur into one another, Camel must be haunted by the question of what really happened that fateful night. Did he really sexually abuse his friend while drunk? Or is he being punished for a crime he never committed? But most pressing of all, if he is innocent, then why is Mock framing him? The 1970s draw to a close and give way to the 80s, but the changes that this new decade brings are lost on Camel. His world remains unaltered, miserable, painful, and hopeless. However, at some point during the 1980s, Camel is struck by a sudden epiphany. He believes that he hears the voice of God telling him that he can make it. This is a groundbreaking moment for Camel. At once, he turns his life over to God and embraces Christianity, hoping that religion will help him find a meaning to all this. Camel takes comfort in his new faith and firmly believes God is on his side. He claims to regularly hear God tell him to keep going, promising him that he'll get out soon. Empowered by his newfound belief, Camel decides to try and make the best of his life behind bars. He joins the prison's Alcoholic Anonymous and becomes a prominent member of the organization. He speaks at length about his journey to sobriety and celebrates his life free from alcohol. He even connects to a woman on the outside called Ileona. It's not clear how the pair know each other, but they quickly establish a deep relationship. Ileona visits Camel on numerous occasions, and they both write each other heart-filled love letters. Before long, Ileona and Camel are married, and Camel becomes stepfather to her 7 children. Although he still has years left to serve, it seems as though Camel can finally see the light at the end of the tunnel. However, little does he know that his life is about to take another shocking turn, and once again, Alice Mock will be at the center of it. It's November 28th, 1986, Elkton Hospital, Middletown. Inside a small private room of the hospital, 76-year-old Alice Mock lies dying. It's not known what she's suffering from, but her body is weak and frail. Her skin pale, she doesn't have long left. Standing at Mock's bedside is a woman called Evelyn Burns. She's known Mock for years and has lived next door to her most of her adult life. However, it's not friendship which brings her to Mock's bedside today. Instead, it's a request. Days ago, Mock sent a message insisting that she speak to Burns one final time before she dies. she promised that she had something important to say. Something which no one else knows. Now, as the machines and monitors bleep monotonously, Mock heaves herself up onto the mountain of pillows behind. Sitting straight and breathing heavily, she looks across at Burns. Then she says she has a confession to make. In a strained voice that's barely audible above the whirring of machines, Mock whispers, "I have something to confess before I die. I put a man in jail." At these words, Mock plunges into the true story of what happened between her and Wayman Camel Jr. on May 17, 1975. According to the dying words of Alice Mock, she and Camel enjoyed a few drinks together on the evening of May 17th. After noticing that Camel had drunk a few too many, she invited him back to her apartment so that he could sleep until he was sober. Mock admits that she let Camille rest in her own bed, where he immediately passed out. Then she confesses something that contradicts the story she's told for years. Something that undermines testimony she gave to the police, as well as a criminal investigation. Mock states that nothing sexual happened between the two. Camel didn't sexually abuse her or harm her in any way. In fact, he slept peacefully through the night. But this shocking revelation isn't all. As it turns out, a crime did take place in her apartment that evening. Mock explains to Burns that while Camel was sleeping, she crawled over to where he'd left his jacket and took between $200 to $300 from his wallet, a combination of his savings and weekly paycheck. But the darkness made her paranoid, and she started to worry what Camel would do if he found out she'd stolen from him. And this paranoia wasn't the only thought playing on her mind. Somewhat shamefully, she admits that she was worried about her own reputation. Mock was certain her landlord would evict her if he saw that she, a white woman, had brought a black man home. Mock explains that she'd become nervous of the neighbors seeing Camel and what they might say. So, fueled by paranoia, she decided to frame Camel. As he lay sleeping soundly in her bed, she tore from the apartment and rushed across the street to the local delicatessen. Once there, she exclaimed that a black man had raped her. Now Mock looks into the eyes of her neighbor, Evelyn Burns. Guilt painted all over her pale face, she confesses, quote, "I said he raped me, but he never touched me." The deathbed confession of Alice Mock is potentially groundbreaking. Not only does it prove that Wayman Camel is innocent and has spent 11 years behind bars for a crime he never committed, it also turns Mock into a criminal. She stole hundreds of dollars from Camel and gave false testimony to the police. Evelyn Burns is aware of the power this confession holds. It could free an innocent man, clear him of all criminal charges, and finally help him get his life back. With these thoughts rushing through her mind, Burns hurries home later that day to fetch a tape recorder so that she can record Mock's words and hand the confession over to the police. However, when Burns reaches the hospital early the next day, on November 29th, she's too late. Mock has slipped into unconsciousness and cannot be awoken. Days later, 76-year-old Alice Mock passes away peacefully. She'll never pay for the crime she committed against Camel. However, Mock's death is not the end of the story. After hearing the confession, Evelyn Burns is determined to reverse the gross miscarriage of justice committed against Camel. But she knows that with no evidence that the confession took place, and the fact that Mock is now dead, she faces an uphill battle. As November freezes to December and holiday spirit gradually fills Delaware, Evelyn Burns begins her campaign to free Wayman Camel. Armed with the dying words of Alice Mock, Burns contacts criminal lawyers, the district attorney, local police, and state government. She even reaches out to the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. She prays that someone somewhere will listen to her and reverse the injustice against Camel. But frustratingly, Burns' efforts are all in vain. Everyone she talks to sends her away. This lack of cooperation isn't unexpected. After all, Burns has no proof of Mock's confession. It wasn't recorded, written down, or witnessed by any other individuals. All it is Burns' word against an 11-year-old closed case. Who's going to believe her? As it turns out, one person does. In late January of 1987, 2 months after Alice Mock confessed on her deathbed that she'd sent an innocent man to jail, there's a breakthrough in the case. A lawyer from the Human Relations Commission reaches out to Evelyn Burns. As part of her work on the commission's prison committee, the lawyer campaigns for equal rights and fair treatment for inmates. So when she hears that there may be a man locked up for a crime he didn't commit, her curiosity is sparked. The lawyer meets with Burns in February and hears the alleged confession for herself. Like Burns, she's touched by the tragedy of the case, that a struggling alcoholic, living on the edges of society, was framed and exploited by a woman he believed to be his friend. For reasons which aren't clear, the lawyer doesn't find it problematic that Burns has no evidence of the confession. It's possible that Burns is able to provide her with some detail that proves its existence. But if this is the case, whatever proof she gives isn't public knowledge. Regardless, the lawyer firmly believes the deathbed confession and joins Burns in her campaign to right this wrong. She reaches out to the Department of Justice in spring of that year and demands them to reinvestigate the old case.
This episode is brought to you by Amazon Prime. You know Amazon Prime is not just a shipping subscription, right? It's got everything, including streaming TV and movies on Prime Video. And of course, Prime's fast, free shipping. Go from watching your favorite shows to getting your favorite things. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever you're into.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God. This is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, wherever you get your podcasts.
For a department who is so swift to charge Camel for sexual abuse in 1975, they're frustratingly slow to reconsider his case. It's not until June 1987, 7 months after Burns heard Alice Mock's confession, and 11 years since Camel was convicted, that a judge finally agrees to review the verdict. Evelyn Burns and her lawyer hold their breaths in anticipation. Will the judge rule in Camel's favor and finally set him free? Or have their painstaking efforts been for nothing? In mid-June of 1987, a Delaware judge reaches his verdict on the case. He claims that, thanks to the recent deathbed confession of Alice Mock, there's now enough evidence to suggest reasonable doubt to his guilt. The judge chooses not to retry Camel, citing that the case against him is too weak. Only two people were there on the night of the alleged crime. One of them was drunk, and the other is now dead. As a result, the judge exonerates Camel. Apologizing for the injustices committed against him, he promises that he'll be a free man once more. It's June 17th, 1987, 1:15 p.m. Bright sunlight pours into the Sussex Correctional Facility in Delaware. Outside the prison, the car park is thronging with traffic, and a crowd swarms around the entrance. Today, they're all here to witness the same thing, an innocent man walk free. The man's name is Wayman Camel Jr., and he's been behind bars for almost 12 years. As the huge double doors to the prison swing slowly open, cameras click and flash in the sunlight. Journalists surge forward, microphones outstretched in their arms as security guards try to hold them back. 50-year-old Wayman Camel walks tentatively out into the open air. His eyes squint in the bright light of day, unaccustomed to the sun after so many years of forced darkness. His arms hang freely by his side, no longer restrained by handcuffs. Having spent over a decade in prison, Camel's body looks tired. His clothes hang off his thin figure, and dark, gray stubble clings to his cheeks. but Camel's expression is almost childlike. It's painted with a euphoric smile, one that spreads from ear to ear. He grins unashamedly at everyone around him as his dark eyes sparkle with joy. Camel walks slowly at first, absorbing every sight, sound, and scent. But then a woman's voice calls out to him and Camel breaks into a run. As cameras flash and journalists shout his name, Camel rushes towards the woman. It's his wife, Ileona. Sweeping her up in his arms, he holds her tight and lifts her into the sky, kissing every inch of her head, refusing to let go. For Camel, this is what freedom tastes like. Later that day, Camel speaks to journalists from his mother's house in Townsend. When he's asked about the crime, he admits that he still struggles to remember details about that night, but he assures journalists that some part of him always believed he was innocent. Quote, "Deep down in my heart and soul, I knew I didn't do this thing, but it seemed like nobody would listen. Now, finally, somebody is listening." He goes on to say that he bears no grudges against Alice Mock or the justice system that locked him up. "I was bitter when I went in, but since I turned my life over to Jesus, I'm not bitter anymore. If I had been bitter all these years, I would have torn my own life up." Camel's forgiveness is a remarkable feat considering what he's been through. He was betrayed by one of his closest friends, coerced into accepting a plea bargain rather than fighting for his innocence, and wrongfully locked behind bars for over a decade. The state of Delaware seems to appreciate the trauma he suffered at their hands. Due to this, they promised to pay him one of two settlements, either $1 million or $315,000 plus $24,000 for every year for the rest of his life. An apology for robbing him of the past 12 years. Now a free man, his criminal convictions behind him, alcoholism overcome, and with guaranteed financial stability, it seems as though for the first time in his life, Wayman Camel has a bright future ahead. Happily united with his wife and seven stepchildren, he can make a fresh start and never look back. Tragically, though, it's not to be. Shortly after his release, Camel begins to struggle, backsliding on all the progress he'd made. For reasons which aren't known, the state never follows through on its promise of compensation. Camel isn't given any financial aid for the injustice committed against him, and he's thrown into near poverty. He begins drinking again and bounces from one job to the next, unable to find steady work. These hardships take their toll on Camel's health, and he begins experiencing serious heart issues. Doctors warn him that they're alcohol-related and tell him he needs to get sober again and look after his body. But unfortunately, Camel doesn't heed the advice. In 1990, 3 years after his release from prison, Wayman Camel suffers a fatal heart attack. He's just 53 years old. Camel's death is a sad ending to a tragic story. His life was one plagued by misfortune. As a black man, dependent on alcohol, he was exploited by a woman he believed to be his friend and mistreated by the justice system. Lawyers took one look at him and wrongly concluded that he was guilty. Then, after the attention of his exoneration died down, they abandoned him once again and never helped him integrate back into society. And the injustices don't end there. In fact, there's one which stands out from the rest. While Wayman Camel died, weighed down by numerous burdens, the woman who started it all, Alice Mock, passed away with a clear conscience, satisfied that she'd spilled her dark, guilty secret. Next week on Deathbed Confessions, we meet Richard Levine. He's a Catholic priest, a prominent figure in the local community, someone people turn to in times of need. But when, in 1972, a local boy is murdered, rumors start to spread that Levine knows more about what happened than he's letting on. The rumors grow, and it seems as though there's far more to Levine than first meets the eye. In fact, he has a dark, twisted past, one which is revealed years later in a chilling deathbed confession. Deathbed Confessions is a Spotify original from Parcast, produced in partnership with Noiser. Executive produced by Max Cutler, Drew Cole, and Pascal Hughes. Developed by Julian Boireau for Parcast. Series produced by Addison Nugent. Associate producer, Nicole Edmonds. Written by Nicole Edmonds. Supervising editor, Jane O. Sound supervisor, Tom Pink. Sound design by Cody Reynolds Shaw. Edited by Carla Flores and Rob Plummer. Mix master by Cody Reynolds Shaw. Music by Oliver Baines and Dory McCauley.